Blog Talk Radio.
Special edition of This Week in Health Innovation on the Blog Talk Radio and Affiliate Networks. This episode is brought to you by the Jefferson School of Population Health and produced by Health Innovation Media, where we monitor the innovation impulse from idea to business model and emerging best practices. Welcome, everyone. I'm Greg Masters, the creator, producer, and co-host of the show. And joining me in the virtual studio is my colleague and co-host, Fred Goldstein, the Executive Director of the Population Health Alliance and CEO of Accountable Health LLC. Welcome, Fred.
Thanks, Craig. Glad to be here today.
Happy you could make it. And we are thrilled. We get to talk with a literal mover and shaker, if you will, in the emerging field of population health, none other than the founder and current dean of the Jefferson School of Population Health, Dr. David Nash, is our very special guest. And before I kick it to Fred, let me give you a high-level introduction to this academic superstar and one who's paving the way for generations to come of practitioners committed to advancing value in this nascent but promising specialty. David B. Nash was named the founding dean of the Jefferson School of Population Health in 2008. This appointment caps a 25-year tenure on the faculty of Thomas Jefferson University. He's also the Dr. Raymond C. and Doris N. Grandin Professor of Health Policy. The Jefferson School of Population Health provides innovative educational programming designed to develop healthcare leaders for the future. Its offerings include master's programs in public health, healthcare quality and safety, health policy, and applied health economics. The Jefferson School of Population Health also offers a doctoral program in population health science. Dr. Nash is a board-certified internist who is internationally recognized for his work in public accountability for outcomes, physician leadership development, and quality of care improvement, repeatedly named to Modern Healthcare's list of most powerful persons in healthcare. His pro bono national activities cover a wide scope. Currently, he's on the VHA Center for Applied Healthcare Studies Advisory Board. He's a principal faculty member for a quality of care program at the American Association of Physician Leaders in Tampa and leads the academic joint venture between AAPL and the Jefferson School of Population Health. He's on the National Quality Foundation Task Force on Improving Population Health and is also the John M. Eisenberg Award Committee from the Joint Commission. So with that truncated introduction, Fred, over to you. Help us get to know this dynamic physician innovator.
Thanks so much, Greg and David. Once again, it's great to speak with you.
Likewise. Great to be here. Thanks very much.
Yeah, thanks. So let's sort of start out on population health. As the founding dean of the school, you know, and with everybody today now talking about population health, in fact, I was just presenting to some students here at Trinity and they're about population health at their Master's in Healthcare Administration program. Perhaps provide us with a description of just what is population health.
Boy, Fred, that is the question of the hour, isn't it? And it's not like we invented that term, not at all, but we do have the only school of population health in the country. So let me give you the academic definition and then the more pragmatic one. So the academic definition, we give a lot of credit to our colleague, Dr. David Kindig, K-I-N-D-I-G, still working at the University of Wisconsin's Institute of Population Health. David, a physician, a public health expert, a former hospital CEO. So Kindig, 15, 20 years ago, talked about population health, which basically says the social determinants of health, socioeconomic status, so where you live, your zip code, your genetic makeup, your individual behavior, those social determinants are the core driver for outcomes. And that medical care is about 15 to 20% of the story. another way to look at the academic definition of population health is we measure outcomes using things like mortality, morbidity, quality of life. We also look at how do the social determinants drive those outcomes. And we know in our country that the most important five-digit number that predicts your well-being is your zip code, not your cholesterol level, not your blood pressure, none of that. So the academic background of population health has a scary conclusion, which is it's not about the laying on of hands in the hospital or in the office. It's all about the non-clinical, non-medical determinants that help predict a society's well-being, thriving, and resilience. Now, the pragmatic definition in the marketplace of 2015 is, how do I successfully manage a population where I am at economic risk for my clinical decision-making? Sounds a lot like capitation going back to the mid-90s. How do I manage this population, whether they're under one payer like Medicare, 10 zip codes, whether they're in my ACO, whatever the population is, how do I effectively manage that, reduce waste, and improve outcomes? That's the practical marketplace definition. How do I move from volume to value? So both those definitions, the academic and the pragmatic, are pretty darn important. We teach about all of this in our school, but I think today, you know, March 2015, those are the two best definitions I could give you.
So you brought up the school and what you do there and teach about it. Can you talk about how you're developing people to work in population health and what are some of the programs that are offered through the Jefferson School of Population Health?
Sure, with pleasure, Fred. So we have five master's degrees, as Greg alluded to in that nice introduction. Let me do a little bit of sort of what's out in the lakefront and what does the spectrum look like. So we started the school with a core program in public health, a very traditional adult learning at night, in-person, face-to-face model. It's fully accredited by CEF. We got a 7-year accreditation, A-plus score when we launched that. And then around that, over a 2-year period, we built 4 online asynchronous master's degrees. And those are, in order of their debut, an online program in health policy, an online program in healthcare quality and safety, an online program in health economics and outcomes research, or as folks in the field call it, HEOR. And yesterday, the Board of Trustees of the university approved the first ever Master of Science in Population Health. So let's review. Public health is the core, and then we have 4 asynchronous online degrees: health policy, health economics, quality and safety, and population health.
Wow. So you're doing all of that, David, obviously, with the school. And congratulations, by the way, on the new master's program. That sounds fantastic. And now you've also got this conference.
That's right.
That you also have on your plate, which is the Population Health Colloquium coming up March 23rd through the 25th, which I understand is now in its 15th year. Congratulations again for that. So I've been coming to this conference for a number of years. It's really an excellent place for me and others that I know to learn and network. Tell us a bit about the conference and who should attend.
Well, I'm so glad that you're interested, Fred, and I know now in our joint venture between our school and the Population Health Alliance, so we're looking forward to our biggest, best conference ever. I know I say that every year, but we learned yesterday that we have sold out the exhibit space. We're actually, at this point, we may have to turn people away, so we have over 600 people registered for the conference, and we're still 2 weeks out. The core objective of the conference each year is to bring together the folks who are leaders in population health, and that includes academics, folks leading integrated delivery systems, the policy community, all of the critical information technology folks that make population health possible in the modern era. And it's a 2.5-day opportunity to learn from the leaders, to network, to really get to meet people face-to-face, because it's not a 20,000-person HIMSS meeting or it's a 700-person meeting, which really is just the right size, so you could still talk to people, meet them, network with them. I think our exhibitors are representing the best companies in the business, or everyone from Fitel to Lumeris to Humana, who's our gold sponsor. So we're very proud that we're bringing together the academic community, the vendor community, the policy community, and most importantly, the practitioner community, who are actually leading in the country the ACOs and the clinically integrated networks. You know, we've been at this a long time. It's always been in Philadelphia. We're now at a beautiful hotel downtown, the Lowe's Hotel, which was recently completely remodeled. So I'm excited. Our whole team, we go for three sleepless nights bunking in the hotel itself to make sure that we deliver the best possible service to all of the attendees.
That sounds fantastic. And I know for those interested, you can find the conference at www.populationhealthcolloquium.com. And this conference is also unique in that you don't necessarily need to attend, but please come if you can. But you also webcast this, don't you?
That's correct. We have a very high-grade simultaneous broadcast with a professional firm out of Seattle, Washington, all very well-lit, excellent sound. Since I'm the moderator of the whole program, we go out of our way to try to engage with folks online. We give them a chance to ask questions. It's usually the technology works extremely well. We get good feedback on it. So I'm always happy to have people who can't travel, can't have the expense of the hotel and so on, to join us online. It's really a big part of what we do. This year, I'm excited about our plenary speakers. I mean, it's a pretty eclectic group. Folks like Jeff Arnold, who, of course, founded WebMD, now is the CEO of ShareCare. People like Stephen Klasko, who's the new president of Thomas Jefferson University and a national leader in innovation. My good friend Esther Dyson of Wall Street fame, all 4 feet 2 inches of her, is going to be there giving a plenary address about Wellville. She's invested her own money, front page Wall Street Journal story, May 2014. So we have a pretty eclectic group of plenary speakers and a large number of folks out in the field who are leading ACOs, integrated delivery systems, managed care plans, and other risk-bearing entities in the marketplace.
That's fantastic. And as always, every year I've found I learn a ton from the plenary sessions and also get to meet many of these individuals. Talk a little bit about the concurrent sessions you have. I know there's one on technology, consumer engagement, innovative population health programs, and community engagement.
Right. So we have four what we call concurrent sessions. So you can't go to all four unless you leave one to go to the other. So after the plenaries, because we have 700 people, we're going to ask folks to choose which of the concurrent sessions they'd like to go to so we could do a little deeper dive. And each concurrent session, technology, consumer engagement, and so on, is moderated by an expert in the field, so that we have people who know all the speakers and who are knowledgeable about the content. They can ask good questions, try to engage with the attendees. You know, you can't do everything for everybody at once. So if you're interested in, should I get Fitbits for my employees, well, we've got a program for you. If you're interested in which registry function do I need for my primary care doctors to practice population-based care, we've got that. If you're interested in what does Wall Street think of all of this, we've got that. So we're trying to customize, if you would, and use the concurrent sessions as a customization product for attendees.
So this is really about identifying key areas, both overall large-scale type of population health approaches as well as some of the unique systems or services that you need to do population health. And individuals attending this will leave with, obviously, better knowledge, but also maybe some tools and ideas that they can use at their provider groups or wherever they're implementing a program like that?
I sure hope so. I've been working on my opening and closing comments already, and I'm going to call it this year the Dirty Dozen, like that great Lee Marvin, Jim Brown, Telly Savalas movie from our childhood. And I bet some of our listeners don't even know about that great movie. But the Dirty Dozen is going to focus on where have we been in the last year since we were all together in Philadelphia, what's up in our field. We're 5 years into health reform. Is that amazing? Almost exactly. And the country is still upside down and twisting around on its knickers about is it legal, is it not. We've got the far right who would like to see it all go away. We have the far left saying we need more. Where's the truth? I mean, it's just amazing, Fred, that we're still talking about, is it a good thing that more people have health insurance? So we're going to dispel some of those myths. I'm sure we're going to talk about the Supreme Court and where we all believe they're going to be by June. That's just the top line. Then we've got to get into consumer engagement, Eric Topol's new book, The Patient Will See You Now. What does that mean for everybody? What's it like when primary care doctors are economically linked to the subspecialty referral community? Does that mean that we may change how we refer patients? What about patients owning their own medical record? I mean, I could go on. So all of those issues are top of mind for us, and they're going to be part of my Dirty Dozen introduction this year.
Fantastic. I'm looking forward to that one. So you talked about the ACA some, and obviously population health was put into that bill. You know, it's part of the triple aim. So this morning as I was speaking to students here at Trinity, somebody asked, is this a fad or is this something that's really got some legs and going to go on? You know, is it something that the provider should step into quickly, slowly? Why don't you give us your point of view on that?
Great, great. Well, just picture this. I picture a doctor, since you raised this issue, precariously balancing between two canoes. Just picture that in your mind's eye. And these two canoes are on this lake, and you got 1 foot in one canoe and 1 foot in the other. One canoe is private practice fee for service. We wish that would stick around canoe. And the other canoe is value-based payment, and you're only going to get paid if you do a good job. Now, if you're a doc like me, pushing 60, and you've been trained that it's all about, you know, come and see me and I'll bill you for what I'm an expert at, it's going to be awfully hard to get out of that canoe. And you're standing there and they're going further and further apart, and you're going to have to decide what canoe you're in, or you could just sort of jump into the lake and call it a day and quit. So we believe that it's going to be a relatively rapid transition, 3-5 years at the outset, getting into the canoe that's all about value-based payment. That canoe, that private practice fee-for-service canoe, you jump in that, and a little bit downstream is going to be a 1,000-foot waterfall, and you're going to perish. So Fred, team, and our school, and our faculty, we believe really strongly that those pernicious incentives that drive overutilization and make care wasteful, expensive, and dangerous, we have an obligation to transform the system into a value-based system. And we give it a 3-5 year time frame to accomplish this incredible transformation.
So great, great visual with these two canoes. So those individuals, in essence, you talked about being able to operate within this new value-based model. And isn't something like this, I can see the colloquium and the opportunity to interact with individuals and hear from those who are doing population health as a way, in essence, to make that new canoe like a lifeboat so you can navigate these waters because they are different. Implementing population health and risk management and full risk contracts and value-based payments is a new world, isn't it? And people really need to get a better feel for that.
I like your analogy of a lifeboat maybe more than my two canoes, for sure. But it is amazing to us, Fred, you know, I've been in primary care practice for 30 years. Sometimes I ask myself, if I were in the front lines doing this every day, could I change how I've been taught to practice? I'm not sure. So, you know, I feel their pain. I get it. We're all about getting the younger docs especially on board with this, and I think they are on board. I think they want good data about how they're doing. They want closure of the feedback loop. They're willing to be compared because, look, we're headed to what we call the no outcome, no income future. That's right, four words, no outcome, no income. That's where we're going. And we believe the smart docs, nurses, pharmacists, the teams, they get this. They want to be a part of the future. They don't want to get in that canoe and end up, you know, falling down a 1,000-foot waterfall. That's just not going to work for them. So they want to understand what are the skills, the tools necessary to practice value-based medicine. And we see it as a spectrum, right? It starts with pay for performance, and then it goes to a patient-centered medical home, and then you're ready to take on a bundled payment, and then you're ready to take on a bundled payment and be at risk for it, and then you're ready to join an accountable care organization. First, maybe it's a shared savings plan, and then you're really ready to go completely at economic risk across the whole spectrum of care, from the office to the hospital to the nursing home and back. And, you know, that's a different worldview than the one I got taught. So it's exciting, but it's also pretty scary.
Yeah, definitely scary. And as you talk about, when you look at this concurrent sessions in your conference, it also goes beyond that care component to integrating the community and some of those other determinants of health that you talked about earlier. So this is an opportunity for providers to learn how to integrate with those broader systems to create true communities of health, correct?
Well, you bet. That's the vision on the mountaintop, you know, a true community. So as an example, I'm on a National Quality Forum task force looking at new measures of community engagement. So, you know, Fred, we have hospital colleagues in the Midwest who are growing crops to feed the poor in the zip codes in their service areas. So, you know, where would Jefferson grow crops, you know, on the roof of the parking lot? So maybe that's not a fair measure. I get it. But maybe a fair measure is, hey, half the school children in Philadelphia public schools are obese. A quarter of all the adults smoke cigarettes. We're the poorest city of the nation's top 10 cities by population. Is that part of what the healthcare system should be thinking about? Well, you know, maybe. Let's figure how can we work together with the community to improve their health rather than just be focused on the search for disease and the care of acute and episodic chronic problems. You know, I recognize we got to do both, but if the nation continues to spend 19% of the GDP on healthcare, we're not going to be able to build the bridge. We're not going to be able to fund the public education. You know, every governor is wondering, how are we going to make these choices every day? So we've got to figure this out. And I want us to be inside the tent making the decisions rather than outside the tent looking in.
Excellent. As part of figuring this out, you also have the co-located conference, the 7th National Medical Home Summit. Obviously,
yes.
You just talked about the role of physicians and primary care in this and medical home. Talk a little bit about that.
Sure. So our partners, the patient-centered primary care group, well, they're really a cool group in Washington, D.C. They bring a lot of people with them who are really interested in, you know, at the ground level, building patient-centered medical homes and all their affiliated structures, getting them accredited and really practicing population health through the patient-centered medical home. You know, we do believe that's a critical component. It's not the only component, but a critical one nevertheless for practicing population-based medicine. So we're happy to welcome Marcy and her whole crew. It's a wonderful group. Their board of directors, people like Paul Grundy and others who are national leaders in our field, they'll all be there too. So it's somewhat of a big tent where we can all be together.
Yeah, Big Ten is probably the best way to explain it, because at the end of the day, I mean, I hear your excitement about population health, and I, too, am really excited about it. I think this is one of the possible ways that we can finally solve the healthcare cost and quality crisis that we face.
as you think of people coming to this conference, what would you say is the potentially the most important thing they would get by coming here, you know, sort of to take away some of that positivity that you and I have about this whole field?
Wow. Wow, what a great question. So I guess if you said to me what would be a great take-home message, I think it would be enthusiasm and a sense that we're headed in the right direction, like a righteousness that the move from volume to value is inexorable, and maybe one or two take-homes on exactly how to implement that. But my overarching goal would be that people come away energized for the battle, energized to get more people covered with health insurance in our great country, energized to reduce disparities in care, energized to engage with the communities. I mean, all of that. We want them to come away with energy and perspective that we're on the right road.
And this is really about taking a system that is very broad and putting it into a framework and providing real solutions through the conference from people who have been there and done it and from leading thinkers. So, I mean, I'm very excited, obviously, as you are, to be coming this year, and very much looking forward to speaking with you again and the other speakers there. Is there anything else you'd like to add at this point regarding population health or your school, or perhaps even discuss a little bit about the journal?
Sure. So in association with the Population Health Alliance and our publisher, Marianne Liebert, you know, we've been publishing the journal Population Health Management for more than a dozen years now. We've called it Population Health Management for more than a decade. At the moment, we're the only such scholarly, peer-reviewed, six times a year journal in the world. Sure, there's Public Health Journal. It's been around a long time, and they're great too. But if you want to understand which engagement program with the community is working and which one isn't, we are that journal. If you want to understand which employee wellness program is working and which one isn't, we're the journal for you. So we're trying to, if you would, support population health with good scholarship, obviously really important if you have a school, and our faculty and faculty from around the country. We have 90 people on that editorial board, and typically 40 of them come to our meeting. As you know, Fred, we're going to have our annual in-person editorial board meeting on Monday night, the 23rd, which is always a fantastic opportunity to re-engage with everybody. So the journal supports the mission, and the mission is, you know, to promote population health at the ground level with good scholarship.
Fantastic. The journal is really an excellent resource, and I would tell anybody, take a look at it and get a subscription. The articles in there and the quality of the work is just fantastic. And it really is important that the industry have this to ensure that we continue to build programs based on the evidence. So I'm happy to be a part of that, and again, look forward to that dinner as well. With that, David, I'd like to just say to everyone, please go to the populationhealthcolloquium.com at the website and take a look at it, and also take a look, if you can't attend, of coming to the conference via the WebEx, which is an excellent way to do it. With that, I'll turn it back over to you, Greg.
Thank you, Fred. Well, there you have it. That will be the last word on today's broadcast. I want to thank our guest, Dr. David Nash, for his time and insight today. Do follow him and the activities of the Jefferson School of Population Health on Twitter via at Jefferson, J-S-P-H, all one word. And also on the web at jefferson.edu. And as Fred mentioned, for details on the Population Health Colloquium, there's still time. Visit www.populationhealthcolloquium.com. We do this weekly at 10 a.m. on Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern on Wednesdays. Join us next week for another episode of This Week in Health Innovation. Until then, this is Greg Masters saying bye now.